everybody. Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Lee Merritt, and with me is my dangerous colleague, Courtney Turner, from the Courtney Turner Podcast. This is the show where we talk about all the things we're not supposed to talk about, all the things the mainstream media would never touch. And today we have a third dame with us.
We do. We have Miriam Hinnane.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And you guys are together down in Florida.
We are. I was at the, we were at the Reawaken America tour. I spoke for the first time there.
It was awesome.
Very nice.
Thank you.
What did you speak about?
I talked about the compassion trap, and I talked about how they use that to divide us, and that the biggest lie of all of the things that makes all their tactics effective is a lie about human life. Because I think right? If they can't dehumanize us, and if they didn't sell us those lies, then the rest of the lies would not be effective. So it was a 15-minute talk, which I think is really, really hard to do. And I covered quite a bit in 15 minutes. Like I explained the Hegelian dialectic, you know, and Plato and Kant and Fichte.
Plato and Kant, 15 minutes. That's not bad.
And I went into
Plato, Kant, Hegel.
I went into Tavistock a little bit. I talked about how the propaganda line factory, and I shared a little bit about my birth story, just because, you know, that was one of the dialectics. I talked about the triple MIC, which is because I think they create the overarching dialectical narrative, which of course the military industrial complex, the medical industrial complex, and then the media industrial complex, and you know, some of the big ones that they sell, which I think is kind of the umbrella for all the others that funnel under them, is that war equals peace, right? We're going to have peace through war. Of course, that makes so much sense. And then, of course, the medical industrial complex tells you that we'll have health through drugs. You know, say no to drugs unless Big Pharma sells them to you. Then the media tells you that we're going to be safe by living in perpetual fear.
You know, I just learned the term atrocity propaganda. And I think it's a big, that term is really appropriate for what's going on right now. Atrocity propaganda.
Yeah.
You know, I saw this, I think maybe we talked about it last week, but when they started talking about these 40 babies whose heads were cut off down in Israel. And I said, no, wait a minute. You got a small group of guys going in to try and take over an IDF base, and they're going to take time out and go to a hospital and chop off babies' heads. There's something wrong with this story. And as we know, it got written back. But the other thing is, I remembered the poster from World War One that showed the Hun, the horrible Hun, bayoneting babies. It's like we always have to involve, and not that people aren't getting killed in all wars,
of course.
They purposely weaponized that.
The incubator baby story.
Yeah, and then we had the incubator babies.
Same thing.
Charred babies and beheaded babies.
It's always the same.
I listed all the baby atrocity propaganda on my Telegram site.
Oh, did you? Well, they don't seem to care about the babies when it's abortion, and now they're arguing to kill babies after they're born. That's perfectly fine.
Well, actually, and that's been going on for a long time. What's his name? Peter Singer, who's the ethicist. He's an ethicist, medical ethicist at Princeton, has been saying that it's okay to have abortion up to 2 years of age. Because essentially, in these guys' minds, you're not a person until you're 2 years of age. That's true.
What?
I know.
That's not abortion. That's murder.
Right. And actually, I think he does call it infanticide. I mean, he's okay just saying we're not really people up until the age of two. Like, you know, obviously there are people that are not parents, in my opinion, that say things like that. But, you know, it's shocking. But if you look at also at Ezekiel Emanuel's, the disability adjusted life year, same thing. If you look at where they plan on giving healthcare dollars, they might tell you they have a big formula to tell you your worth in life, but they actually, or how much your life is worth per year. But it's really simple. If you're under two or over 60, you get nothing. So that's really.
Didn't California have eugenics for blind or deaf back in the day?
I think so. I mean, the whole one of the main premises behind eugenics movement was the disabled, that they should be. And that you know, Scott Shapiro, right? He talked about how after his daughter Grace was born, of course, he said he can prove that they killed her because she has Down syndrome. But when she was born, because they didn't do the amniocentesis and all the testing, and they said to the parents, they said, "We think your daughter was born with Down syndrome." You know, of course, they were like, "Okay, you know." And they said, "Do you still want to keep her?"
What were they going to do?
No,
color?
That's what he implied.
Well, you know, my mother wasn't, she's long gone now, but my mother was an OBGYN nurse back in the, you know, 40s and 50s and even late 30s. I think she graduated in 37 from nursing school. And this, and I think this was, I can't remember, this was in New York where this happened, but she was in the delivery suite and a baby was born with some disability. And the doctor literally handed her the baby and said, go do something, you know, drop it, do something with it. You know, like they wanted her to kill the baby. And she said, I'm not doing that.
Where was this and when was, what era?
I'm going to guess it was either the very early 50s or late 40s. Yeah.
Wow. And yeah. Probably, I mean, you all know my story. Yeah, like my mom says how children with disabilities should, that they should be able to have an abortion, if you know. And that's, you know, kind of what I talked about. I mean, I personally don't think any of us were wrongfully born, quote unquote. I say that because I was the wrongful birth case. That was the lawsuit that my parents fought. It was called the wrongful birth. And I don't know. I mean, I just don't think, I think that's kind of playing God. Like you think you should decide who gets to live, who doesn't get to live. And I think that plays in very nicely to what we were going to discuss today, because their whole agenda is to dehumanize us.
Absolutely.
And merging us with machines literally dehumanizes us. And it's a great transition, or not so great, in my opinion, to creating, you know, a post-human world, which they actually have handbooks on this, like the post-human handbook. I tried to get the book. It was $158, mm-hmm. but I couldn't find it anywhere. So it's very expensive and you can't find it.
Who wrote the book?
I have to find who wrote it. I have a picture of it. I can give it to you.
Post-human world? I mean, there's still people today.
It's a handbook for a post-human world, yeah.
I spoke to someone today who was like, what's transhumanism? It's like the melding of machine with man. It's well underway. And, you know, while people are being distracted with the mRNA, no one's talking about the possibility that the platform that they were really testing out is nanotech. Would you agree?
Well, some of us have been saying that.
Yes.
Well, I will just answer your question. So it's Diana Walsh and Michael Bess, Post-Humanism, An Introductory Handbook.
And it's what year?
It was recent. I think it was, I want to say 2020.
You can't find it?
I can't.
Oh, it's 100.
It says it's $158, but it says it's unavailable.
Right.
The cost of truth has gone up.
Well, yeah. Remember that book that I had interviewed the other day? I mentioned this book, The World Order.
I can't get it.
And I got it. It's The World Order by William Still. And this was written in 1989 or 90. And it's really an excellent book. But the point is, don't even bother writing it down. Apparently, you can try. But what we found out is I went on 1 week and we talked about it. And I mentioned this. And then the next week, then Courtney tried to find the book and it had gone up to this enormous price. So she didn't buy it. And then the next time it was not available. Now it's not available.
Yeah. And the John Coleman book about Tavistock.
Oh, yeah. The Tavistock, $5,000.
$5,000 on Amazon.
Yeah. Glad I have that one.
Yeah.
Already. Yeah. I printed out the PDF, but my friend John Klasik has it because Charlotte Izerbitten, you know, who wrote the about the schooling, was like a 700-page tome. She worked for Ronald Reagan, the Secretary of Education. And so she did a whole expose about the origins of our education system. And he inherited a lot of her library.
That's awesome.
And so she has the original Tavistock book.
Yeah.
I told him if he needs money, he can sell his books. And he's got a very expensive library.
Yeah.
Estate sales, going to go and look for old books.
Used bookstores are going to take a new life here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's one of the problems we're in. And one of the reasons I think people are not paying it, we think they're not paying attention, but the real question is that we may be given different information based on our usage. And, you know, if you won't really seek this stuff out now, it's just not out there because they're scrubbing the internet.
They sure are. The Wayback Machine from even 3 years ago, the amount of 404s, even from the Wayback Machine and archive. And when I started as a professional researcher, you can have access to archival houses. Now, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's something that I found out very early on in this whole COVID nightmare, is that they want you to believe that they want evidence-based medicine. And this is a little off our topic today, but it's the ability to get a hold of the data that you want. And this is going to happen with this whole, what they're really doing with us rather than this mRNA nonsense. But you know, the idea is they want you to think that we practice evidence-based medicine. But when I would go to certain, and I would look for certain papers that were critical in figuring out what was going on, they were all put behind a paywall now. And if you're not in it, or you have to be in an institution to read it.
Yep. There is
that's not evidence-based medicine, guys. That's just, you guys can make up whatever shit you want, that's and then we can't thing. Find it.
Yeah, that's why all the paywalls came through at the same time, post-2020.
There is a website, though. It's called Sci-Hub, and that you can, it doesn't have everything, but I've found that you can bypass some of these academic gatekeeping through that.
PubMed? I mean, if you can bypass PubMed, I will be surprised, but I would be glad.
There are some. Like I said, it's not every article, but right. I have been able to bypass some of them with it. Yeah. So
it's back to the days of looking at microfiche. It's like we have to go back.
Yeah.
Well, they'll destroy that. I mean, I think that, you know, like one of the things I tried to find was the original copy of the Constitution showing the 13th Amendment, because apparently the 13th Amendment has changed. It now talks about slavery, but when it was written in 1787, it talked about you cannot have a foreign agent in the Congress.
Right.
Well, that would exclude every bar attorney. And what percentage of our Congress are bar attorneys?
Yeah.
So
may I say also that there's an immunity act that was instituted in 1945, and it lists, I interviewed Corey Diggs, and it lists, you know, all the central banks, CERN, WEF, Gavi, that have immunity. So if people ask why isn't justice coming to Bill Gates or Fauci, that are, you know, faces anyway, they're fall guys. Now, you know, they have immunity, these companies. Like, I didn't know Gavi is above the law.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll show it to you. Her report is phenomenal.
1945.
Well, here's an interesting start to our technologics thing, this about taking over our minds. This is something I learned a year or so ago. There, it was one of these articles that they didn't think to get rid of. I don't know if it's still out there now, and I should have looked it up and gotten the actual writer's name. But it was an internal medicine doctor in Lima, Peru, I think, because he was at the major university there. And the only reason I think he published this was basically to complain that people were getting the Nobel Prize for work that they were using involuntary test subjects, okay? That, you know, I don't think he was saying that the process was bad, but that he was kind of pissed off. They were getting Nobel Prizes and they were involuntarily using test subjects. Okay. So here's what it is. It's called the Nano Mafia. And it's called the Nano Mafia. And the reason that they call it that is because basically they were learning, they were working on, you know, this idea, by the way, of giving having microchips to put in your brain. That is so old. Anytime you hear that, that's probably 40 years out of date. That's just not that's not what's going on here. What they're doing with our mind is through microscopic, submicroscopic particles and things, and through wavelength. So there are various different ways of doing this. But what he's talking about is using little nanotechnologies, and there are various different things you could clump into that. And instead of having to open up your skull and put a wire in, which is what they started with, and then they went to an injectable kind of more of a microchip thing, but you still had to actually do a little procedure. Now they can dose you. What he was saying is that you can, that to get these involuntary subjects, what the researchers did they wanted to change behavior using this nanotechnology. Who's going to volunteer for that kind of thing, right? So they got in bed with the drug cartels in South America. And the drug cartels volunteered, I guess, their own people, or they got other people. I don't know, but they were not necessarily fully informed, I would guess. And they learned how they could just by ingestion, give them these little nanobots that they could then, that would go to their brain and do things. And so they discovered that the best thing to do it with is beer. that beer has somehow it probably opens up micropores in your blood brain barrier, but it, because it's got gluten and other things in it, gliadin, which we know can open up your gut. So who knows? I don't know why beer specifically, but they could dose them with beer and then they could study the effects and do their, whatever they were doing. Now, what this led to, and this is the term, the nano mafia, what this led to is that you don't have to, you know, it's great for criminal cartels. If they want to rob a bank, they don't need to go in with guns blazing and take hostages. All they have to do is take out the president of the bank one night, get him a few beers, and then get the codes.
Wow.
I mean, that's how I interpreted what he was saying.
Sorry, go on. Yeah.
Go ahead. That's it. That's the story.
I heard that you were looking to use like old beer factories to create like biological weapons. I'm wondering.
They were using old beer factories?
Well, that's also where they're growing their plasmid DNA that recently we found out are in the jab.
Right. Yeah, and that the one of the videos that I pulled, actually, maybe we should just play that, because the video was on the plasmids. I think that it was the, let me see, which one was that?
And it fits into Lieber's virus-sized transit or
They got rid of him pretty good, right, Lieber?
Yeah.
First he got arrested, then he got
the scientists who are creating a bio internet of things.
Scientists who are creating a bio internet of things. The internet of things connects devices across the globe. Now researchers are considering how bacteria can join the network. Imagine designing the perfect device for the internet of things. What functions must it have? For a start, it must be able to communicate both with other devices and with its human overlords. It must be able to store and process information, and it must monitor its environment with a range of sensors. Finally, it will need some kind of built-in motor. There is no shortage of devices that have many of these features. Most are based on widely available, low-cost devices such as Raspberry Pis, Arduino boards, and the like. But another set of machines with similar functions is much more plentiful, say Raphael Kim and Stefan Poslet at Queen Mary University of London in the UK. They point out that bacteria communicate effectively and have built-in engines and sensors, as well as powerful information storage and processing architecture. And that raises an interesting possibility, they say. Why not use bacteria to create a biological version of the Internet of Things? Today, in a call to action, they lay out some of the thinking and the technologies that could make this possible. The way bacteria store and process information is an emerging area of research, much of it focused on the bacterial workhorse Escherichia coli. These and other bacteria store information in ring-shaped DNA structures called plasmids, which they transmit from one organism to the next in a process called conjugation. Last year, Federico Tavella at the University of Padua in Italy and colleagues built a circuit in which one strain of a modal E. coli transmitted a simple hello world message to a modal strain, which carried the information to another location. This kind of information transmission occurs all the time in the bacterial world, creating a fantastically complex network. But Tavella...
There was a study looking at genetically modified E. coli that was emitting functional nanobodies. That is so sci-fi. And once I started writing about Charles Lieber, I had people approach me and say, please help me, I have nano in my brain. And I didn't discount them as cuckoo, but I couldn't help them. What are your thoughts on people already having a type of neural lace or crap inside of them?
Well, I don't think we know, but I do think that there are clues. And one of them is, for example, they hate ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. Mm-hmm. They hate all the antiparasitics. These things are acting like parasites. You know, one of the things I will say, and I was down, I had this discussion with Brian Artis about the whole issue of plasmids, because he's big in this plasmid thing.
Yeah.
The one thing though, I mean, who knows? I mean, these guys are also so far ahead of us and they're all making us guess at what they're really doing. But plasmids they're sensitive to acid. In other words, the idea you can be dosed with a plasmid is not correct. you know, right. plasmids die in pH less than 5.
They do.
And so your stomach is a great, that's why do you think they wanted everybody on protonics and all these acid dissolvers? You know, they wanted you, the proton pump inhibitors stop you from making acid. It's not good for you. It doesn't help. That's not the problem with reflux esophagitis. It's usually too little acid, so your sphincter doesn't shut down. So why are they doing it? Like, why are they giving us statin drugs? Because the statin drugs cause dementia, and this might cause, this might make it easier to dose us with these things. But I do think they're acting like parasites. So personally, I think the answer is take doses of these, and you got to, don't waste your money on just doing it randomly. You got to have a process of doing it over a period of time in a structured way. Just I've got a thing on what to do for vaccine remorse, and that's what I would do, like 3 days on, 5 days off, and just do it for a while. And then if you think you got dosed again, maybe you have to repeat.
I want to say that before I interviewed Dr. Merritt on Parasite, I was taking one, not fenbendazole, not ivermectin, the other one, nitazoxanide. And I took it for a month and just ran down my immune system. It's very important, given what you told me, Dr. Merritt, that initially there's a pheromone, so it will kill the mama parasite, but then it will activate the laying. And if you don't do it properly,
you got a cycle.
Yeah.
And who knows with these nanobots, but somehow, you know, if it's small enough, I mean, this is really, you know, I'll tell you who wrote about this a long time ago, Michael Crichton. You know, he was a Harvard physician, and he wrote about this in several books, but one was about the nano swarms. Remember that book?
Yes. Michael Crichton is great. Talk about predictive programming.
Yeah.
But I think he was a good
guy.
Like,
I'm sure he was a good guy.
Pardon?
I'm sure he was on the good side. He was trying to warn.
I think so too. I think he was warning. Yeah.
I have a question, Dr. Merritt. So if we're finding the plasmid DNA in the poop.
Well, that's because, see, in the poop, you see, plasmids are shared by bacteria in the body. That's how you get penicillin resistance. But this happening in your gut. Your gut doesn't have the acid of the stomach. This is beyond, it's swapping these things at a level that's internal. Okay, until it gets out of the acid environment, it's in the bacteria. It's the bacteria in your gut that can swap these things. So that's why they have to inject you. I still think they have to inject you.
Well,
maybe they could make you breathe it in. I don't know, but
that's interesting because I was starting to go was with the shedding or transmission because I feel like a lot of people are having low acid. Issues.
They should take HCL.
Yeah, you can take HCL. Yeah, but I'm seeing that like in the functional space that's become much more of a problem.
Right. Well, our diets are contributory. If you don't have enough of the basic nutrients, you know, when they damage the soil and they damage your ability to that they can do, and they can damage our ability to actually utilize things. But if you don't have, for example, enough calcium, then you don't produce, I can't remember what it is, but there's the acid producing cells need calcium to produce acid, for example. So people that are nutritionally deficient might not produce acid. And then, you know, people with parasites, it's a big problem. Ulcers are a big problem in people with parasites, which also is maybe a deficiency of acid, you know? So there's lots of stuff that could go into that. I don't think I think the problem here is they're happy that our acid is getting low because it improves their probably ability to dose us orally, but I don't think they can do it yet.
But it is an attack on all fronts and people don't realize that you need these cofactors in order to have these functions, you know, even like, let's say sleep, you are getting enough B6 or are you getting the cofactors to allow for melatonin or, so it's an attack on all fronts. And in the past 3 years, I've seen our food quality take a dive and also the supplements, like a lot of good brands. Like, why are you putting magnesium stearate? Why are you putting titanium dioxide? They've taken, like there was, I take a thyroid medication and my compounding pharmacy in California said, we're going to be adding some fillers. And they said, well, send me the list. Why are you putting aluminum chloride in my?
Really?
Yes.
That's crazy. A compound pharmacy?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And just like, you know, people who go do IVs because now they're in vogue. Well, it's like, yeah, put that GMO corn as the source of vitamin C into my, and even top supposed compounding pharmacies are putting GMO. There was one place was putting GMO corn, and I went on Yelp. And then next day, they took the Yelp review off.
Wow.
Defies the whole purpose of Yelp.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they could do that.
Yeah, I didn't know they could either. That's interesting with the compounding pharmacy, because I feel like that's kind of the problem. I always advocate for parallel systems, but the problem is they get co-opted.
Yeah.
So in order for anybody to survive and to, you know, be sustaining, really just to make a living, in order to exist,
yeah,
they end up being compromised. That's really, really frustrating.
Yeah, you know, the medical doctors, we can get out of the system. We really can. We could offer you great non-system care. It's called cash. You have to pay cash for it. You can't have it through your insurance, and you can't have it through the government because they're evil, at least the government for sure. And what you have to, but the problem is we can't break the pharmaceutical companies out.
Right.
You see, the pharmacists, they're trapped by all this going through the FDA, going through, and so they have a board of pharmacy. So, you know, it's like I discovered that the anonymous complaint against one of my friends who was treating people with ivermectin and stuff was by the board of pharmacy in my state. In other words, there, so that's a really, you've hit the nail on the head that that's a really hard, if we have a treatment for these nanobot things and the nanotechnology, we can't necessarily get it for you.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I just heard that Bill Gates has created a salt alternative.
Oh, really?
And the FDA is pushing it because, of course, sodium is bad for you, right? That's why people have high blood pressure. It's not, but that's what they tell you, right?
Yeah. That's everything they tell you is wrong. I hate to say it. Everything.
Yeah. Everything. Anything they say, it's the opposite. But
it's the opposite.
Yeah, basically. But the FDA is now pushing this salt alternative, and who knows what's in it? I haven't had time to dive into what's actually in, but I don't trust any alternative that Bill Gates is creating.
I don't even need to see the ingredients. If he's for it, I'm against it. Right.
Right. Yeah, but I think that's a pretty safe.
Yeah. You know, this reaction too of like, I often as a food Nazi or against poisons bring something up. And people, the reaction is, well, everything gives you cancers. Oh, okay, let's douse ourselves with some pesticides and not care. So there's a lack of really caring of what you put in your body temple.
Yeah.
And let's say you go to an IV place and you think this is good. Who's going to even think that they're putting GMO corn in your veins?
Right.
Because they're supposed to.
Right, I wouldn't think that.
No.
Well. No, but you know, your point about that people say, well, everything causes cancer, you know. Right. Now, and you mentioned Tavistock. Let me put those two things together. If I wanted people not to care or to give up on this idea that we have to police what we ingest, and that is, I would have a lifetime program where I just started telling you that this causes cancer and that causes cancer and this causes cancer, until finally you realize you couldn't, even if it's true, I can't manage it, right? That according to California, literally everything causes cancer.
Yeah.
But if you take a step out of the Truman Show and you realize.
The building I used to live in, it causes cancer. That's what, there was a sign telling you that.
What's that one?
In California, in Santa Monica. So like you enter the basement, like the car garage where my car was. But because of California law, it tells you entering here may cause cancer and birth defects if you are pregnant.
Well, you know, I rather take like I've just moved here, and like literally 2 days after my worst nightmare, I get a knock at 9:30 in the morning. A young guy holding a canister. I'm here to fumigate, and I had to really. They come every month, so I said, "What are these mutant cockroaches? Like, how long? You know, you have to come every month." So then I had to argue with them. They will come and spray the hallways. So. But that doesn't have a notification of that will cause you cancer, but your parking lot will.
My parking lot does. So you were saying that if you wanted to convince people,
Right. So the Tavistock point here is that if I wanted to desensitize people to anything else I added, I'd overwhelm you with additives. I'd overwhelm you with cancer warnings. I'd overwhelm you with all this nonsense. So you weren't paying attention to maybe cancer has one root cause, like parasites.
Right.
And so that this, what the, all these chemicals are doing in our life is they're damaging our immune system that makes us more susceptible to our own parasites. If we, if I look at that as a model, it fits everything I'm seeing. It fits what's happening after the vaccine. It fits what's happened before the vaccine. It fits why chemotherapy and radiation sometimes work, but it's a race between whether they kill the parasites or kill you, you know? So it really, that was, I think, purposeful. That
it becomes like the boy who cried wolf, and people just overwhelmed, and so they just kind of give up.
Right, exactly.
I was going to say also the biofilm that the parasites create and hide against, and I find it fascinating also the fact that parasites eat heavy metals and that they douse us with the heavy metals.
Right.
I think they're nanoforming this planet by putting it in the water, in the lettuce, in the clouds, in us, in our animals.
So I don't know if we should play the 2 minute clip, but you know, like the World Economic Forum, I think most people have heard it, where, you know, they talk about how this is the 2020 is the year where surveillance goes under the skin, and you know, Klaus Schwab says how it's not about changing the world, it changes us. It's not that the world is going to change, it's going to change us. And he talks about behavior, and he is talking about this, you know, transition of Internet of Things to Internet of Bodies to Internet of Nano Things, and then now the Internet of Bio Nano Things. And I guess that, that's the trajectory.
And IOB also stands for Internet of Brains. The idea of having a hive mind, a huge, you know, this idea that we're all smarter together than we are individually if they can just hook all our brains together.
Yeah, like
that is the Borg.
A high Borg mind. Maybe we'll play this 2 minute video and we can talk about this. Yeah, I think it'll be a good intro.
They call it part of the fourth industrial revolution.
One of the features of this fourth industrial revolution is that it doesn't change what we are doing, but it changes us.
The very idea of human being some sort of natural concept is really going to change. Up until now, the conversation we've been having is around freedom of speech. Once we can access people's thoughts and access people's emotions.
The focus, as all of you know, today is on what's now called the Internet of Bodies, involving medical implants and other kinds of devices that go inside your body and all together with the Internet as a whole comprise the Internet of Bodies.
The Internet of Bodies, or IOB, is actually an ecosystem. It's a bunch of devices that are connected to the Internet that contain software and that either collect personal health data about you or can alter the body's function. We think of the Internet of Bodies as this collection of all these devices as well as all the data that the devices are gathering about you. And in healthcare, it's Internet of Bodies has been around for quite a while.
So the Internet of Bodies, imagine the power of AI. What is artificial intelligence? It's a way to automate computation and cognition. So we can now automate learning, perceiving, doing computation. It's a pervasive general purpose technology that will be used in all of our industries, that will come into our professional networks, our private networks, our schools, our industries and our offices. What I wanted to epitomize with the Internet of Bodies is this notion that we will be under assessment, we will be under measure of computation in every aspect of our lives in the future. From what you eat, who you date, what you buy on the internet, how much energy you use, but also what are your vital signs, how well are you doing in terms of health, what kind of specific genetic quirks do you have, what's your genome telling about your health, about your mental health, about how well you are doing, how well you are aging, what kind of disease you are susceptible to.
It has a bit of an Orwellian twinge to it.
Well,
I love how they all laugh at
Right, like that's just so funny, very cute.
Well, I like this on your earlier tape when it said they blah, blah, blah about these things that they're going to connect to. So they have to, their qualifications, they have to be able to respond to the human overlords. And I wanted to say, no, we're not the overlords. Is there an opposite? Is there an underlord? I think we're the, yeah, whatever the German, the Unterlord, we're the Unterlords, because that's, their nice words are that it will modify your activities, is it's going to control you. This is a control system. I mean, it's kind of like the FEMA camps. They're not calling them concentration camps or re-education camps. They're calling them, you know, something nice, the 15-minute cities.
I feel.
Right. And they talk about, so sorry, but yeah, they talk about tying all of this to 15-minute cities. One of the videos I was watching, they actually admitted that this nanotechnology, the Internet of Things, it was all about the 15-minute cities. And so they're connecting all this biometric data. And you heard her say it's not just about measuring it's not that just the biometric data, like measuring it, but it's also controlling. Yeah.
Right.
And they're doing that with the 15-minute cities. So.
I was just going to say, in doing some research, I found that they're putting nanochips in cheese to make sure that there's no counterfeit cheese to detect. That they're also putting a nano in diapers so you can know when your child is about to have a bowel movement to mm-hmm. change the diapers.
I heard that. That's creepy as all get out. But now, you know, one of the things we didn't mention, I mean, it is possible, although I don't believe you can dose people orally with DNA plasmids, but I mean, I'm not that maybe they figured out a way to do it, but it's not easy. But I do think you could dose people maybe with little microtech like you're talking about that you might not detect in your food, at least for a while. Mm-hmm. It's monitoring you.
Yeah. And yeah. What are we seeing? I mean, tell me if you both agree that I feel that already when I speak to people, I'm like, oh, you're vaccinated. There's some brain damage going on. I feel that I see that. And someone had explained to me that maybe the jab keeps us in our lower chakras. So we're not in our heart. We're not using our throat. We're not in our third eye. We're not accessing source. It's all fear, lower hedonistic. So do you observe that there's changes in people you may know that have gotten jabs? I do.
I've heard that from so many people. And I will just say this. This is why I think that I don't want to sound doom and gloom, but I'm going to say if you don't take their injections, I think they really can't do what they want to do to you. They have to get it under our skin, or they wouldn't have been working for 40 years in my life to do this. I've been watching it come on for a very long time. Right. And I think this has got to be, if they could have dosed us with food, they would have done it a long time ago. So maybe they can temporarily put like they you can swallow these things that then go through your colon and kind of, it's like a virtual colonoscopy kind of thing. It kind of peeks at things, but it passes out.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know that they have, you know, that, I don't think they're as good at playing God as they think. And I think that's our big hope is I'm more worried in that regard of you swallowing like they're talking about, you can swallow a chemical that then they can broadcast a signal to.
Right.
And again, one of the good news is about news about 5G is they have to be real close to you. You know, that's why if you put they can't get through biologics easily. So if you put your plant, you know, you plant stuff around your house and you do the various things we know what to do, that makes it harder for them.
Well, I'm sorry. The two things I want just to address that are one, when you're talking about the 5G, and then the other about the injection. So I think that they're masters. I always bring up the Fabian socialists, the incrementalism, because they layer these things.
Right.
And what I've seen is the two things is there was a video where they were talking about how this internet of bodies is really going to be coming into play when they get into 7G. So they talked a little bit about 6G. Now, some of you, I know some people have probably seen this. I've showed it on my platform where the University of Amherst, Massachusetts, admitted that 6G was going to be leveraging the human electromagnetic frequency in order to power it. And they were basically going to harness, like, use humans as a battery, essentially.
Right. So they're basically the Archons now coming out of the darkness. They're doing it openly. You know, the Archons, the agnostics, the Archons were secretly out in the periphery sucking off our energies. But now we got MIT doing it overtly.
right,
MIT
right. Is incarnate in the, yeah, that was, so in 7G they talk about how the internet of bodies will really, because they'll really be able to do this full integration. So they talk about 7G, and then when you're talking about how they really, you think that they really have to inject us, so it seems like they didn't get the critical mass that they were hoping for this, you know, COVID round of injections. And so now they're ramping up. You can already see it with the propaganda. They're ramping up with the flu shots and saying how important those are. They're also talking about doing a cancer shot.
Yeah.
Right. Because they know, they can't deny that the incidences of cancer have skyrocketed. So they're like, well, if you're concerned, talk to your doctor about getting a cancer shot. And we know that cancer just looks a lot like a money laundering shell. Totally. Because I'm not saying it's not real, but how much of their own admission, when you go to their site, they talk about how much money they've received and that the funding for it has increased by tenfold, but so is the problem. So clearly, but they're like, don't worry, give us more money and we'll solve the cancer problem. Really? Because you've done that so well in the past.
Yeah. Right. So. Right. So the answer to everything is give more money. That stops global warming too. Give more money.
Just more money. That's going to fix the whole planet problem. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, this again, a classic example. They created the disease, and then now they're going to give you a cure. And if you trust them to create the disease, are you really going to trust them with a cure? And that is, if people don't recognize that with COVID, now it's become a worldwide information access and IQ test. I mean, either you're not accessing the information, or you're not paying attention. Right. I mean, I can't, at some point, people, this is a war. And if you're, I always said, it's like people in Sarajevo that went overnight from being this beautiful city to being this bombed out hellhole, and people were hiding in their basements. Well, if you went out that first morning when the war started and you were completely ignorant of what was about to happen, you walk out front thinking you're going to go have a cappuccino and you get shot. That's where we are right now. If people don't wake up now, they're going to be easy. They're going to be the first targets. That's the first targets in war are the clueless, the people with no situational awareness. And I'm not saying that without any sympathy. I have lots of sympathy, but at some point we've done everything we can to try and make people aware. And they're still listening to CNN.
And we've paid a price for it.
Yeah.
We've paid a price.
Yeah, they will pay a price.
I had someone say, didn't you know, Miriam, not to say something? I'm like, what? Did you remember the just 3 years ago, we had something called freedom of speech. Now I should have known, like Winston in the corner, you know, not to say anything, that 2 + 2 = 5. I wanted to ask you, Dr. Merritt, you know, you spoke about the Archons, and like, I use this analogy, like I eat meat. I'm not evil. I'm very well aware if I'm eating another creature. So if we are fodder for something that's not human, I do not think this is human anymore. And I'm confident to say that so we label it evil, but if we're just food, and knowing how parasites can modify behavior, whether it's nanoparasites, but that something is modifying the behavior and they're going along with the plan, these overlords or these human overlords, what is your thought? Is that too crazy to say?
No, I'm right with you. I said, you know, I used to think this was maybe a prison planet. I obviously, like most people, I was just fat, dumb, and happy, thinking the world was just the way I saw it, you know? And then I started realizing there's a lot more to it and it's complicated. And then pretty soon I realized, you know, I think this looks like a prison planet, like Alex Jones showed, prison planet. But now I think he's going to have to change his name to, you know, Ranch Planet, because that's what it looks like now. We are, you know, we are on a prison planet, but we're the food. And part of it's our energy. There's no question in my mind that there's something out there sucking off our negative energy, because they create it so much. But the question is, and now we're finding out that they're actually eating us. And I think that once people realize, when we talk about pedophilia, it kind of makes it sound like it's just, not that it's a just, but it's having to do with child rape. But it's really, It's pedivoria. It's eating children. When you realize that's what you're stacked up against, that they're sacrificing these children for their body parts and their blood and all sorts of things, then it gives this game a whole new level of intensity, in my opinion. And people, again, there's only so much. We kind of came along to this slowly, and I do feel bad for the people that are suddenly thrust into this, and they can't, they just can't function. But that's what's going to, you're going to have to wade your way through this and start learning, because we have to learn really quickly. And I honestly, again, I will say these people hate humor.
They do.
They hate you to be happy. That is the cure here.
Yeah, I agree.
Make jokes, make memes, get out of the dumps, be happy.
Make big promises.
Look at all the things, sing hymns in church, do all the things they told us not to do, because they know it works.
Exactly.
If they inhibited it, like hugging your neighbor, taking care of your elderly, you know, and beyond that, look at what they've done over our whole lifetime. My mother, I remember, was just appalled that I was putting my kids into preschool daycare one day a week. I was doing it one day a week so I could go be a surgeon over 2 days a week. And my husband was home the other day. And because nobody did that back in the days when I grew up, we all grew up at home with our parents. Look how that's changed in my lifetime. And so now I think they've been separating us from each other in many ways we just haven't been aware of. And
yeah,
we're going to have to do things to reverse that.
And this comes out of, you know, a lot of the trauma-based mind control research, because they found that the biggest form of torture is isolation. And so they found all sorts of ways. Of course, over the past 3 years, they ramped it up quite a bit with the COVID, you know. But I think they have been slowly doing this over time, because it makes people so much more susceptible to being controlled and programmed.
I would be lying if I said that the past 3 years as an empath, focusing on all of this darkness hasn't had an impact with me. It certainly has, because I feel deep. And I think a key is also to be embodied. People are not embodied. They're not centered and grounded. And that is a big key. And it's even harder now if you're a bold person, if you are a dangerous dame, to speak out. It's like unheard of, because everybody's been muzzled and just doing my job. So,
Well, how much of this do you think, besides the trauma-based mind control, how much do you think that this was a, you know, we are, as we're mammals, we're kind of fuzzy creatures that like to herd together. There, we do have a herd instinct. And for many people, it's just very hard for them to give up the herd and be the one guy that's speaking out.
Right.
And so I get that part. You may not be that one guy that's speaking out, but at least listen to that one guy and maybe not run to the guns. You know what I mean? But that is a problem too, is that what you're talking about is we were meant to be together. And so it's a planned program from a long time ago, I think.
Yeah. I agree. And when you talk about freedom of speech, right? So one of the videos I was talking about when I was doing the research on this, and they were talking about how, you know, we're about the Internet of Things going to the Internet of Bodies. But they were saying that before, a lot of the conversation was around freedom of speech, but now humans are hackable. And I'm sure you've heard Yuval Noah Harari talks about this, but it's not just him. It's, you know, a lot of these think tank, quote unquote, experts, the very smart people, keep saying how humans are now hackable animals, and that we can biohack, and that we can control their thoughts, not only read their thoughts, but control their thoughts. And that really seems to be what they're after.
Do you think it's already happened that people are been uploaded into the?
Well, I don't think you have to be uploaded. Look at what did they call it? There was a name they had in the 50s and 60s. It was it's like photomodulation, but that's not what it is. It's psychotronics. Mm-hmm. And they knew that certain wavelengths, I mean, these are DARPA studies and things. I don't think we called it DARPA then, it was ARPA or something, but whatever, military intelligence kind of research. But they were looking at certain wavelengths and the effect it had on humans. And so, you know, they can make people happy. They can make people sad. They can do things just with wavelength. And I think that is our biggest problem here, to be honest. For those of us not willing to take any injections from these psychopaths, our biggest problem is the wavelength problem.
Yeah.
And that is hard. you know, if you want to talk about the woo world, you said, you asked me if I was along these lines. I mean, I'm going to tell you, I think the moon is a repeater, and I think Saturn is beaming something on us. I know that may sound crazy, but the rings of Saturn are acoustic rings. They change. They're not always of the same pattern. So, and Saturn used to be close to the Earth, and the ancients talk about a time before the moon came. So if you believe Velikovsky, that Saturn might have gotten pushed into the outer rings of the planets and the outer planets because of this collision that happened that caused the asteroid belt. Right. Well, maybe when they say that when the Gnostics talked about this world being hacked by these archons, what they really were talking about is something came and they started beaming the Earth with a wavelength, and right. We changed because of that. What if that's what's cutting us off from the source, from the creator?
I think so. I think there's a lot of validity to that. And you brought up, you know, ARPA doing these experiments. I actually just interviewed Lee Dundas, and she went through every single one of the frequencies. Like, they can make you happy. Wow. They can make you sad. They can make you depressed. Right. They can make you genocidal. Literally, that was a category.
Yeah.
And I think what's really interesting is they're talking about it. Also, one of the things they've talked about was now with gene editing. Well, I put that in quotes because I know we've talked a little bit about like them not really being able to do quite what they want us to believe that they can do. But one of the things they talked about was that now with this Internet of Things and Internet of Bodies, that they would be able to determine who might be a psychopath. And of course, not to be super, you know, skeptical and paranoid, but of course they couch it very benevolently. Like, we can change the genes, you know, so we diagnose before they're even born whether or not they have psychopathic tendencies. And of course, we know from MK Ultra that they actually worked on not only exacerbating but creating psychopathic personalities and dark triad personality in general. So what's to stop us from thinking that they might, if they had the capacity genetically to do so, that they wouldn't do so, because those people are perfect pawns to advance their agenda?
Absolutely. You know what? I bet it's just a screening test. In other words, it may just be the opposite. Look at World War II. They hired the psychopaths and they hung the empaths. I mean, to some degree. I mean, people like Karl Brandt, he wasn't a bad guy. He was really trying to help people, but he did it. He was stuck in an evil system. So they hung him because he was speaking out at Nuremberg, you know, but they hired the guys that would come over and make these chemicals to poison us. So maybe it's just a screening test for psychopathology. And once we find you, then we train you and you become one of us, baby.
That's what I'm thinking. That's exactly where my head went. I was like, this sounds super paranoid, but we know from the MK Ultra study. So if they now have more information, why wouldn't they? But
it's a casting call.
It's a casting call.
That's right. You know, in-brain neuroelectronics, did you ever read anything about them? Because that's what Merck bought during this whole time. When I thought all these, everybody else was working on mRNA, and suddenly Merck announces it's not doing that anymore. And I thought, wow, it got a soul. What happened? But then I found out the next month, they just bought in-brain neuroelectronics. And that's where I first heard the term Internet of Brains.
Yeah.
And clearly it's not, they're not trying to hook my right hand to your right hand. They want to hook all our brains together so we get a uniform, you know, they want to have a working class, but they don't want all these old people that are worthless to them.
They want a technological neo-feudal system.
Right. That's exactly what this is about.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, many people don't have that vision to see the trajectory. Mm-hmm. I joke that I'm trying to figure out our real history, be in the present and anticipate what's happening in the future.
Right.
Like that movie Everywhere All at Once.
Right.
But I think because people don't put credence on things they don't see,
right,
that this is just beyond the reach of their capability to.
Well, you know, what's funny about that is people don't see X radiation, but they actually fear the bomb and they believe that you can get damaged by X-rays.
Sure.
But when you try and tell them that the EMF is damaging your DNA in a different way, and it's damaging you daily on your immune system and damaging, they can't believe it. They said, oh, that's just nonsense. Nobody, you know, blah, blah, blah. Even in spite of there's quite a wealth of information scientifically about that. You know,
right.
Putting it on animals, they claim they haven't tested on us because they're testing it on us every day. But
Yeah, I'm curious. I don't know, but this would be interesting to research. But you're talking about Merck buying the InBrain. Well, I'm curious. You know, there's something called the Brain Trust. And one of their projects is, are you familiar with this?
I've heard that, and I meant to look that up. What is it? Tell us about the Brain Trust.
So one of their projects is Lenin. So they preserved him, and they have his brain in like a million pieces. And they're working. Well, their hope is that they're going to be able to reconfigure it. And I don't know what it is they think they're going to do with it, but they obviously think he's very, very special.
Vladimir Lenin?
Why Lenin?
That was my first question. Thanks.
I don't know. All I can only conjecture that it's because he was such a
diabolical
dictator, and they're trying to figure out, and he's a hero to them. I really don't know.
But you know, the interesting thing about Lenin is, remember, he died rather suddenly. You know, I think it turns out that he realized that they weren't going to be able to feed their people because of what they'd done to the kulaks and everything. And he was in the process of advocating reversing communism. And people don't realize that, but towards the end of his life, he was, and it wasn't that old, but once he started talking about, hey, we can't keep going down this road, it's not working, they killed him, I think.
Well, I didn't know that.
That's when they got Stalin. I'm surprised they're not taking Stalin's brain, but maybe he's not preserved.
I'm surprised too, but that's actually very interesting, because I think Lenin was really trying to figure out, he was seeing that it wasn't working.
Right.
One of the things I always bring up is that, you know, he called this meeting in 1922. It was after the Comintern. He called this meeting with Antonio Gramsci and Georgi Lukács and Willy Munzenberg, who was, you know, a lot of people think Bernays was the father of propaganda, but Willy Munzenberg was right up there with him, you know. And they had this meeting, and one of the reasons it was in Antonio Gramsci's grandson's memoirs about his, and he talked about his grandfather. And one of the reasons that the primary reason he had this meeting was because he was like, I don't understand. After the Bolshevik Revolution, Marx promised that this was going to spread through the West. It's not working. Why isn't it working? Right. And it was Gramsci who said, because you're treating this as an economic problem and you're forcing an economic revolution, this has to be a cultural infiltration. And so that was when they set up, right after that, they set up the Frankfurt School in Germany. And then from there, they went to Columbia University. They set up the Institute for Social Research, which, of course, then went to Michigan, and they spread throughout the West. But that was like the beginning of the cultural.
So Lenin was really the first example, the first big example of the academic, which he was, the academic who just had all this theory in his head and thought that he could make a world better than everybody else.
Yep.
And just couldn't imagine that he could be wrong, but at least he recognized he was wrong and paid the price, I think.
I think that's right, actually.
He got sick consistent with poisoning, so I think that's going to be it. Yeah.
I don't know why they're so fascinated with him. I should dive into that a little bit more. But
I would like to know. I don't know enough about Lenin, but why his brain? Are you going to tell me they put his brain right away in a jar of formaldehyde? They knew to save it for the Brain Trust?
Well, I don't know that they knew exactly, but it's been preserved. So, yeah.
That means they must have other people's noggins in the jar too.
Oh, well, I think pretty sure they have Einstein somewhere.
Right. Yeah, that's right. They were talking about the size of his brain and that it wasn't actually as big as they thought that it would be.
Yeah.
Because they thought that the physical size correlated to intelligence, which they've disproven. Yeah. But I guess we can wrap up. I know we should wrap up soon, but I'm curious for both of you, where do we think, how far along do we think this internet of bio nano things actually is? And look, I'll just add this before I put it out to both of you. But when I was reading through the case, that, you know, there was a lawsuit between Leader Inc. Technologies and Facebook and DARPA, the CIA government, which I think ended around 2012. They finally did settle. But it was because the story of the social network was really great, you know, predictive programming and narrative creation, but not 100% accurate. And it seems that they took the technology really from his son. But when I was looking through the case, it seemed that the primary reason they were interested was not so much for the social network capacity, because, you know, while that's obviously been very useful, it was really more that it was a foundation. It wasn't exactly, you know, it wasn't exactly what it is now, but it was a foundation, a blueprint for what they wanted to create, which was this Internet of Things. And so that was part of the reason why they were taking this technology. So the reason I bring that up is because it is very clear that they're trying to use the social media as a means of obviously data mining, and then of course using that data to condition and program, you know, whether it be just psychologically, or I think it's actually further than that. I think they're using all sorts of frequency and, you know, flicker technology to create programming, and it's so directly targeted based on the data that they mine. So I put that out to ask both of you, where do you think, how far along are they actually? Are they as far as they say, and where do you think they'll go, and can we stop it and, you know, remain human?
Well, I can go first, because my answer probably will not be as educated as yours, Dr. Merritt. But I think they're further along than they tell us, that they're running experiments all the time. I see people who are not really, they're vacant. As far as I'm concerned, they're just doing their jobs and going through the motions. But that individuality, I mean, it's not just because of the Internet of Bodies, Internet of Brains. I mean, killing the individual while making you think you're an individual because you've got purple hair. Yep. There's nothing individual about you. Everybody else.
Yep.
And as far as the frequencies, I mean, I believe that I've been attacked by frequencies before, but it's so difficult to prove. And I would love to know a solution other than the things I wear on myself or turning the Wi-Fi, because unfortunately I found myself in South Beach, which is arguably a smart city, ironically, until I am able to escape back into the jungle. But I'd love to know the solutions to protect yourself. Anyway, that's my answer. Go ahead, Dr. Mary.
Well, I mean, I think if people don't know about EMF Sol, they can go on my website at the medical and check out EMF Sol, because it's not just wearing a thing on your wrist. It's also, people will say, how can this possibly protect you against that great tower? And I'm just going to tell you, it's simple physics. It's the inverse square law. This is very close to me. But you have to change. EMF does not work like X-ray. So just saying that, you can go and they can, if you go through my link, they show you, they teach you how it works, and they prove biologically it works. I'm not going to wear a little, you know, something on my neck just because somebody told me it's a good idea. But I'm not going to just do that. I mean, there's more to it than that. Because this guy, because the guy that owns EMF Sol, he thinks Corey. He can mitigate the, Corey, I think he thinks he can mitigate the towers. That he, if he could get, if they really didn't want to hurt us, if these were really not weapons, that he could actually put some stuff on the towers so the signal wasn't damaging to us. And that would be awesome. So we don't necessarily have to be troglodytes to get rid of the problem here, although I think we're going to have to get rid of some of this stuff. But I'd say my question, I just have one question, and I think that if you answer the question, if we can answer the question, we'll know how close we are. And that is, what percent of people does it take to stand against digital currency, see, for it to not go through? Because I'm going to tell you, the digital currency is the end game. If we cannot buy things independent of them, we cannot buy food, we cannot do. Now, there are some of us who will last longer, presumably on the farm, because we can grow our own food, but they'll come after us.
Of course.
So we need, that's what happened to the kulaks. They were the last holdouts of the Soviet Union. But we have to realize that you give over your purchasing power to them, because you put something in your hand, you use your retinal scan, you do everything with this thing and your fingerprint, and you think, oh, it's so cool because it's so easy. I don't have to carry that wallet anymore. Guess what? The next time you speak out, you won't get gas for your car. And that's what's going to, and also I think the second thing they're doing between it's that and the price of oil. Okay. So they're creating this Mideast. I mean, there's a lot of, you and I have talked about this whole nightmare in the Middle East, but they're doing it. It's not organic. This isn't the suddenly the Palestinians and the normal Israelis and the normal Palestinians didn't just decide to kill each other. Right. This is always precipitated for a reason. And there are many reasons probably going on here, but one of them, not a small part, is the gas prices.
Yeah.
oil prices. And also going along with that is what BRICS is doing. You know, the BRICS people are going to...
Iran was just invited to BRICS.
Right. And they're going to. And you know, God love them. I'm okay with that. We should not be... there. We should never have been the bully on the block because we got the reserve currency. I hate to say it. I say it as a 10-year Navy veteran, but that was a bad deal. And we shouldn't, we've been acting the bully just because we had that. Well, it's going to go. But what happens when prices of gas go to $10 a gallon is people are not going to travel, and you're going to automatically have the 15-minute cities, and then you're going to have the digital currency, and then you're going to have your biometric scans, and they're going to have you. So let's just be aware that, so if it, you know, it only took 3% to fight the revolution. It only took 3% to bring on the Bolshevik revolution. But how many does it take to prevent that? I don't know the answer. What do you think?
I'd say 3%, maybe between 3 and 11, probably. But I want to speak to what you were talking about with the kulaks and the farmers, because I think that's really important. Of course, they'll come after, but this speaks to what we were talking about in the beginning, my speech about the compassion trap, because the way they actually got the kulak was to shame them, to make them feel guilty for being the quote unquote successful. I mean, they were farmers. It was not like, you know, they weren't aristocracy. They were hardworking, you know, labor intensive individuals who had figured out how to work the land, and they were successful, and they were literally the breadbasket of Ukraine. But they shamed them and guilted them into literally creating starvation.
Wow.
And
well, they shamed the people that went around and took the food from the kulaks into thinking they were doing the world's good. Those kulaks didn't get shamed into not growing food. They were still productive, but they convinced the police force to go and get their food.
Exactly.
And distribute it because it's more fair. Is that what that's what you mean, I guess? Okay.
Yes. And so, and this is why, you know, but this is why I really think it's important for people to understand, because, you know, what I talked about with the compassion trap, people think that, you know, this whole egalitarian concept that, you know, when they make all of these different labels and then they tell you what's quote unquote compassionate, right? That the Black Lives Matter or women's rights matter, that's why it's her body, her choice, or what, they're all dialectical, false managed dialectics, and they're lies usually. It's totally lies to divide us against each other. But this is very much like, it is identity politics. It is Maoist strategy, Maoist philosophy. It's othering, it's Marxism. And it's really just a strategy to create victims. That's what this is all about. When you talk about the digital currency, I really think they're going to play that same playbook, and they're going to talk about how they're going to use things like UBIs to entice people. Well, it'll help the poor. And, you know, then the artists can do their work and we can have a culturally rich society. Or they'll tell you that, you know, well, now the immigrants, because they're flooding us with immigrants, that, you know, now they'll be able to have a system that, you know, because they're not used to, you know, they don't speak the language. Because it was one of the things they sold you with crypto in general, was how it was universal, right? So I think they're going to craft all of these narratives. They're going to play on people's compassion. They're going to weaponize compassion in order to put people into these groups. And there's going to be the people who have to really stand strong, step outside, you know, what I call the sorcerer's circle. And I didn't coin that, you know, that comes out of like the Hermeticists and, you know, the Hegelians, but really step outside of that framework to see that this is not compassionate. It's dehumanizing. It's enslaving humanity. And I don't think it's going to be as easy for a lot of people to be that 3, or it might take 11%, but I don't think it's going to take a majority. Really, because
it's not going to take a majority, but I bet it's going to take more than 3%, because in this situation, we have to have enough people stand up for this, that stores will not get rid of cash.
Right.
In other words, it's the merchants that are the final common pathway here.
Yeah.
Unless the government. Now, here's the good thing, too. I was just thinking about this.
Okay.
Even, you know, the drug dealers don't want this. Right?
No.
How are they gonna manage their drug deals unless you have cash on hand to buy things? Are they gonna take CBDC for heroin? I don't think so. And then even the waitress, she doesn't want her tips given to her. And I know all digital, she likes those cash tips because those are not necessarily searchable by the tax man.
Exactly. You know?
So there's a lot of people that are not going to want, I mean, a lot of businesses deal with cash as a survival strategy.
Of course.
So but they are doing it incrementally. I know restaurants here that it's like, we don't take cash. Like what?
So yeah, I don't go. Well, what do we do? Do you just tell them I'm not buying it?
Oh, well, what I tell them, I've experienced this, and we tell them, well, it's legal tender. You have to take it.
Really?
Yes. And the argument they'll make is you are right. They know they have to take it if you force them because it is legal tender.
Really? Okay.
However, what they will tell you is they don't have to give you exact change.
Really?
And so if you're prepared to tell them that you're going to do cash, just be prepared to have exact change because I'm not, you know, overpaying them just because they don't want to take legal tender and they want to.
Oh,
do-
I have the perfect thing. I was going to take this to the bank and figure out if they could. I have a ton of change. Yeah. I'll just sit here in front of them and I will count out pennies for my Starbucks next time.
Yes.
Starbucks doesn't take, I don't drink Starbucks. They don't take cash.
No, but Starbucks, most Starbucks have a sign saying they don't take cash. And I call them out. We've done this. We've called them out saying you have to. It's legal tender. And that's been the response. They said that you are actually right. We do have to take it. We don't have to give you exact change.
I think that's what we should do. We'll just have bags of cash and we'll just slow up their line. Sorry about that.
We're just going to stall the line. So, yeah.
There's a shishi smoothie place that they're like, don't take cash. I'd love to see if I just dumped some. Well, it's legal tender. You have to take it.
Yeah. But I mean, it says it on there. It says legal tender. And as far as I know, it is still legal tender in all states. So and
it's interesting who has during the Rona and when I was unfortunately living in San Francisco, there were a couple of places with their plastic and they're like, we don't take cash. They started then.
Yeah. Well, and you know, they were, I thought that was one of the points about COVID. I could see it.
Oh, yeah. How cash is a disease.
It transmits disease. You know, that is so stupid. I mean, it's like, when has anybody ever gotten sick out of handling change? They always say, your mother always makes your hand. I knew a doctor that would not, this was the University of Rochester years ago. When he went through the lunch line, he had his friend pay with his money because he didn't want to touch it because he was just so paranoid about the disease potential from money. You know, it's a psychiatric problem, but anyway.
I know that was really cash. I'm like, my cash transmits the disease, but you're now going to hand me all of the stuff that I just bought and it's on plastic. That doesn't transmit the disease. Okay. This makes perfect sense. I never understood this either. I mean, just if you use common sense, you go to the grocery store and they're like, you have to wear a mask and they have the plexiglass, right? And I'm like, but everybody's touched all the produce.
Right. And they hand you your change through a hole this big in the plexiglass.
I know.
Are you kidding? That was the funniest part of the whole thing.
I've said to a couple of them, thank goodness for your plexiglass because it's preventing me from all those germs that are now on my belongings that you've just handed me.
I want you to wash them now before
the
I take
conveyor
them
belt at Whole Foods in San Francisco. I couldn't put my produce on the conveyor belt. Okay. And then I remember 2 weeks later, I'm like, oh, you guys had a little huddle. It's safe now. The conveyor belt's not going to.
Well, they quit poisoning you with all that spray shit they put on the conveyor belts. I about had asthma attacks every time I went in the store. It's like they're making that's not safe.
Totally. Or you're sitting down at a restaurant and they're cleaning the table and they're spraying and I have a fit. Like, what are you spraying all of this? Like, there's something called drift. You know, it's beyond.
It is.
But you know, the scariest part about those plastic shields that a friend of mine pointed out the other day, he said, you know, I think it was my friend Doug. He said he looked into the manufacturing of them and there was no sudden, even though suddenly within weeks, all across America, everybody had those things installed. There was no increase in production.
So they had already had them ready.
That's what I'm telling you.
Like the Clorox, the amount of Clorox that the profits must have gone up from all their disinfectant and
I have one more question and then I will let you guys go. But because we had talked a little bit about this last time about, and I know you've done some work on this with graphene. So that's one of the things they talk about with the Internet of Things and the Internet of Bodies. They talk a lot about graphene. How much of that do you think is legitimate, or do you think it's a decoy? Do you think, or are they just in early stages? Where do you think they're at with all of that?
I have in one of my articles on Charles Lieber, a whole litany of studies regarding graphene, tesloferases, the ability, the benefits of, from their point of view, of graphene. Of course, they argued that if there was graphene in the jabs, they would not be clear. They would not be clear. They would be gray. There's a certain way to dilute it. So I personally, because they killed me off of Twitter for linking graphene to Charles Lieber, I believe there is merit in the graphene oxide. I'd have to pull up my links to be more specific.
Well, there's no question it's in there. I mean, if you go to any of these papers about how they make the lipid nanoparticle, it shows the graphene wafer. So anybody that's saying, oh, that's just, you know, nonsense science, it's just been documented that this is how we do it. Right. And the other thing is, the two things, I mean, I'm graphene, the for me, graphene is, what they're going to do with it is a whole different probably issue, but what we know some of the things it does to us, but graphene is a super conductor and it transforms megahertz into terahertz.
Right.
So if you're, and terahertz is what nanobots run on. So it's like a transformer. So if you want to transform, if you want to be able to do these little nanobots, you've got to have some graphene around somehow. And we've seen these self-assembling things. So I don't know much more than that, but there's no question it's in there. And there's no, in my opinion, the graphene really explains the clotting, the early clotting that we saw, even before it gets to the clots, when you get that rouleau formation where the red cells stack up on one another.
Yes.
So you're not okay, because laminar flow depends on negative charges all around every cell. That's what all the cells repel each other. They repel from the wall because everything's negatively charged, and we get this beautiful flow. Well, what happens when you put graphene into that situation? Suddenly, graphene sucks up all those negative charges. It's an electron stealer. That's what parasites do. That's what toxins do. The final common pathway of disease is not biology, it's physics. It's damaging proteins by sucking up electrons. And so what happens is it sucks up all those electrons, and now suddenly you get clumping of the red blood cells. So we know it's damaging, and that can be, that's why carbon 60 can reverse a lot of that, because it's an electron donor. So just from those simple observations, you know that this isn't good stuff. But I think they're doing it for another reason. I think it's so it's targetable, it's traceable, and it's or it's somehow electrically going to help us put you on the internet of brains.
Just say it's 1,000 times more stronger than steel, and it's more conducive than copper. And tesloferases is a real thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that they've come so hard on anyone that utters or mentions Geo
is a clue.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also when you talk about the tracing, because that's one of the thing, one of the concerns they have with bacteria creating the bio nano Internet of Things, is that they're saying that that's not traceable. So, of course, they couch it in that they're trying to help us. But there is the possibility that it could kind of run amok because the bacteria has a life of its own and we can't control that like we could with some of this graphene oxide. So they have talked about that. So I kind of, that to me sounds like they're doing, it's multifaceted. Yeah. They're creating narratives out of it, that they're using it to help control some of this other stuff that they're doing. But I think it's also that, they do have the control over it. So then they'll be able to, track it.
But ultimately, if it's bacteria, you can kill bacteria with antibiotics. And you can kill bacteria with the bad bacteria, you can kill it with chlorine dioxide. You can kill it with things that right now we can get our hands on. The key is, that's what they're trying to make this work. They've got to, the reason they've got to lock us down is they really can't make, the people that are out there in fear, worried about this germ and that germ and this disease and that disease and all these, the wavelengths and all these things we're talking about. Keep in mind, this is a technology. This is just, we're talking about a technology web that there's possible that they could weave together, but they can't do it right now. And don't let them do it. We can't. The point is, they can't do what they're saying right now if we understand the game and we play the game better than they do, you know. Exactly. Even though David Icke says the game is playing you, I think we can play the game in the sense that we can know what if that we understand that the game is not about, you know, scary RNA, you know, and scary COVID and scary monkeypox and you name it, whatever the next day disease du jour is. It's not about that. Once you get out of that and you take care of your parasites, you treat yourself for toxins, you mitigate the electromagnetic field and you supplement like we've talked about. And then you get right with God, you know, reconnect with the creator. You're not going to go down with this. We're going to win if we do that, I think.
I think so, too. When you talked about the bacteria and the antibiotic, recently they were talking about antibiotic shortages.
They're doing antibiotic stewardship.
They
are putting in place in hospitals around the world. Now they're cracking down to antibiotic resistance, which I personally have been covering for a decade. It's nothing new.
Right.
So why now are they caring about the fact that they've abused and misused antibiotics? Why now? But you'll look up CDC and has introduced, I just wrote about it in my Substack, antibiotic stewardship, where they're cracking down. Why would that be?
I got a call this morning. You know, it's the first time in my life, not today, but when he first called me, the first time in my life I ever got a prisoner call from a federal penitentiary. But Bishop Grinnan called me today to talk to me about, he's put out a written thing that he wants to get pushed out on the internet and stuff. He's the guy who was doing a charity mission in Bogota, Colombia, using chlorine dioxide and good diet and good, you know, and Miriam's been a, you know, big supporter and big help trying to get him out. But the point is that why did they do that, Miriam? It's because they know that is the ultimate thing. And unlike, you know, doxycycline or something, you can argue that we don't need doxycycline, but this stuff is used by every industry now. For almost everything. So they can't take it out of circulation, but they're taking it out of the hands. Like they've denied it to Canadians and they put Bishop Grinnan literally in jail for 3.5 years and with his sons that did nothing.
That's got 12. So his sons, two sons got 12. They got 5. They've already served 3.5 years. They've been 3.5 years, their constitutional right to a speedy trial.
What?
The government knows. Yeah, we've been fighting. The same operation that came after me, Operation Quack Hack, in 2020, the FDA, FTC, DOJ put forth Operation Quack Hack when after hundreds of people, they came after me for vitamin C and my chelated 4,000 ppm silver and using the word prevention. But because Mark has in the past taunted the FDA, because he's a church, he was using the C word, cure, with abandon. Mm. And he went on Banned with Alex. And I joke that even banned Mark, because they took the interview down because FDA also went after Alex Jones for his silver, I believe.
Yeah.
And so last week, Mark Grenon was sentenced and his sons got 12 years. They used chlorine dioxide against Ebola. They know it works.
Yes.
But what, and they were using against malaria, and they use against, I mean, my friend takes tons of this stuff over to Uganda and treats malaria. That's his mission.
So why are some people?
Why are the kids getting, how did they get 12 years? What was the basis of that?
Right. Why did they get 12 years? 36-year-old and 29-year-old son. I mean, they all got charged for a fake COVID cure. So fooling the peoples, and around the time that they went to arrest them, they sent out the MSM choppers, and then they cut to, like, I thought this was a safe neighborhood. It is a safe neighborhood. This is a church. And then they showed the kegs, the chlorine dioxide. And, you know, when he was in Colombia, it was a joke because he had a cell phone. I was speaking to him every day. He got to even shtup his wife once a month. So it was like lockdown for us. It was like, it was just
I talked to him too down there.
So, but now this prison, I mean, they drink tap water. They haven't seen the sun. They're drinking, they got shuffled around in diesel therapy, which is when they take them from prison to prison, from prison over 3-4 months. They went to visit an Oklahoma prison, a Texas prison. They got injected without their will for TB. Just horrific, horrific. And when I did the prison protest, you know, a whopping 11 people showed up. Wow. So you have, that's real. You know, when you have something.
And what prison are they in now?
Northeast Miami.
Northeast Miami. They're in a federal.
But I couldn't see him because I'm not family. There's no windows. When we went there, there were other people going to see their loved ones using, you know, the little mirror thing. It's just so heart-wrenching.
So we have a gulag. What you're saying is we have a Stalinist gulag on our shores called a federal penitentiary.
Because also they went pro se, so they didn't have a lawyer. But to me, it's like, this is happening to God-loving people. We're glorifying criminals like George Floyd while we are putting behind bars God-loving people. And because Mark is taunting them, because probably he still has his faith, mm-hmm. despite 3.5 years of this cruelty and torture and constitutional rights.
It's hard to imagine how his sons, who weren't there full time, were they involved in the business somehow?
I believe they were all involved in the business in Bradenton, Florida is where, I tried to call his baby mama, but I couldn't get a hold of her. I kind of lost touch with Mark because of the crap that's been happening that I've been dealing with, but I did try. I even went on this NBC series thinking, oh, surely that, you know, this is a national television show, people will know, but for chlorine dioxide, these are real heroes, and I don't know, they're filing their appeal, but it's heart-wrenching. It's
hard when you look at what happened. First of all, they had no speedy trial. They were years in jail before they even had and he was in jail, I think, at least for a year or two before he really had a charge.
Right.
You know, he was being held for extradition without a charge, really. Wow. And then he got a charge. And then they put the kids in jail just to coerce him to push pressure on the Colombians to move him to Florida to be with his sons. See, because the Colombians didn't want to extradite him because they get paid to keep him
in prison for extradition. $20,000 a head for anyone they put in their Mickey Mouse jail.
Wow.
Yeah. See, that's you can't make this stuff up. Now, initially, Mark told me that he never really said it cured it. He said he reported that people started calling him. The reason he went to Colombia was for better bandwidth. He was in Dominican Republic, and it was a surgical missionary that he ran a mission. I mean, he flew in doctors and he did all this stuff, and he discovered this stuff down there and with Jim Humble. And anyway, eventually, the reason he moved to Colombia was simply because he could get on the internet better, and it was the age of the internet, and he could have a bigger mission. And so people started calling him all over on this internet show saying, hey, I took this when I had COVID, and I'm well now. It just turned it around right away. And so he just reported on that, and that's what got the FDA to literally go down and get the gendarmes in Colombia to arrest him.
Yeah.
Now, how does our FDA have this power?
So they claimed that he used the word cure, and that was the premise they were getting him on
against
when he never
COVID,
did.
Against under Operation Quack.
But you're saying he never even used that word.
He told me that he was, now I don't know what he's done since, but he was telling me, he was just reporting that other people were saying this on his show. I don't know, Mary, you're closer to that than I am.
I would just say he knows that, technically being a church, sure. I have a quote from him that he was parading the word cure, but it was because in conjunction with COVID specifically, and they went after people who sold iodine, they went after people silver. I mean, vitamin C, yo, come on.
And D, remember Eric Napoli, yeah. D.
And NAC, so they went after, but I think they made a poster child.
Yeah, that's what
for
it sounds like.
Under Mark, and to think that the boys got 12 years is,
and it is effective, because I can tell you, I was asked to come on a show and talk about chlorine dioxide because the doctor that was promoting it just wouldn't come on and say anything because he was afraid of going to jail.
Right.
So it has been effective.
And why are some people, apparently you can buy it on Amazon.
You can buy it on Amazon, exactly. But they say it's for water treatment.
Right.
It's
water treatment. It's FDA approved. I just put out my Substack. I have the link to the FDA approval, the title, whatever. And it is used as water treatment. So,
but we're water. Maybe we can just treat our water with it. How about
that? Yeah, seriously.
The water in my body.
The water in your body. That's what I'm thinking too. Yeah, exactly. It is crazy. The FDA has so much power. I know that you're familiar with G. Edward Griffin, right? I asked him what was his red pill moment because he's like the OG red pill guy who started the red pill expo. And he said it was, when he did research on cancer, a friend asked him to write an article and he was like, this is going to be a book. But he said it was the big moment for him. He said it was not like overnight. It was a long journey, obviously, like many of us. But for him, he said one of the big pivotal moments was realizing that Big Pharma, the FDA has forbidden anybody to use the word cure. That you're not allowed.
Right.
That pharmaceuticals and doctors, the whole medical industry, they can't say cure.
I mean, they came after me for using the word prevention. I mean, they kill you in different ways. They've digitally assassinated. They've come after at a $1 million company and they've made sure to attack it. So I cry for Mark and his children.
Yeah. It's horrible.
It does sound like they're using him as an example.
Well, in the FDA power you were mentioning, listen what else they did. Think about the poor people that desperately wanted ivermectin and their doctors had been silenced because they were afraid of losing their license.
Yes.
And then when they found somebody that would give it to them, it was these little 3 milligram pills and it was very expensive. So not everybody could afford it. And then when they found these places over in India or places overseas that they could get it, then the FDA was instructing the United States Postal Service to destroy the boxes. And it's still going on at the border. Now, again, we're living in Stalinist times. That's not something that should be happening in a free nation.
No.
Safe.
They'll destroy like what could potentially be life-saving medicine that are cheap and effective and, you know, relatively safe. And yet they have kids being smuggled under barbed wire.
And being chopped up for body parts. That's okay. But this is not.
Right.
Right. Well, they know that. This is a completely demonic
It's a
demonic Stalinist totalitarian world that they're kind of bringing.
Right.
Yeah, and then
in China, that's what I was saying. We get on the podcast, we get people all the time asking Jan, could she please, they'll send them money if she please send them crystals for chlorine dioxide. And she just has to say, we can't do it. I mean, we just can't do that. But the reason they're doing that is because now, even though I can buy the crystals on Amazon, they cannot in Canada. So I tell people, I'm not telling you to use it. I just use it myself.
Right.
I use it for water purification myself. And I buy it in bulk.
I've used it after a coffee enema to bust out biofilm up my rectum. And it's worked. I mean, I've seen the biofilm being busted.
Wow.
Wow.
But I'm not doing those coffee enemas. More power to you. I was convinced. Somebody said, oh, you really? I went to some meeting and it was really this green coffee beans because I don't like coffee. And I thought,
it's a special coffee.
Here's how I can get the benefit. And I said, I'm not, I don't care if this makes me live to 150. I'm not doing this on a regular basis.
So many people to put coffee up there, but I'm like, not Folgers, folks. It's special coffee.
Not Folgers. Yeah. Folgers is old and pesticide. So yeah, maybe not.
Well, Shemaine Nugent is a big coffee enema person. She says, I'll teach you how to do it. You just didn't do it right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I sell them on Honeycomb. I've converted many people who thanked me. And I tried to do one yesterday, but I realized my coffee enema was missing. The clamp was missing. So anyway, I can't wait.
Well, maybe I'm doing it wrong, but I'm not.
No.
I want to show the commercial before we sign off.
Yeah, let's do that. And I think the commercial is a great way to end, because we were talking about, all of you have mentioned how we cannot let them rob our joy. And I think humor is one of the most effective ways to get messages across, and also for us to have fun and laugh, because that's the best medicine of all, I think.
Absolutely. Should I premise the commercial or no? That Courtney's in it?
We can, for the audience.
This is a big pharma spoof. If people go to my Twitter, I did one on VMVD before the Rona called Vaccine Mania and Vitriol Disorder as a response to vaccine hesitancy, a condition that doesn't exist. So this is for a very serious condition called JJD, also known as jib-jab denial.
I saw that. Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you all for watching, and till next week.
Thank you for having me.
This is why we're dangerous.
Thank you.
Do you secretly suffer from COVID-19 vaccine remorse? Do you get frequent urges to confess to someone that you think you fucked up big time? Are you beginning to suspect that you were used as a lab rat in a live exercise? It's all right. The truth hurts sometimes. JJD, also known as jib-jab denial, is a serious condition, but there is hope. Introducing Admit You're Wrong, a graphene oxide capsule so small you won't even see it. But don't worry, it knows where to go. It will find that refusal and zap it away. It's time to come clean with the lies, face your shadow, and become a better human being. It's time to admit you were used in a worldwide psyop and played Russian roulette with your life, and maybe even your child's life too. Admit You're Wrong can help. Admit You're Wrong is not for everyone, but don't ask your Rockefeller doctor about it. The most common side effects include feelings of deep remorse and severe insomnia. Other side effects are common sense and critical thinking. Other side effects include explosive diarrhea and a desire to apologize profusely to all the people you shamed. You may also have a desire to question your entire existence. Do not take Admit You're Wrong if you're okay with being a brainwashed NPC or a pincushion for big pharma. People who have been jabbed and boosted 4 or more times are unfortunately not good candidates for Admit You're Wrong. Admit You're Wrong can give you a new lease on life. Call today 1-800-FUCK-BIG-PHARMA for more information.
That's awesome. And where can people find your work, Maren?
Yeah. People can buzz on over to MariamHinane.com or HoneyColony.com or Mariam Hinane on Twitter. And I'm asking people to check out my Substack, one of the last places where I can be free. I don't know what the Substack is. Substack.com/ Mariam Hinane. So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Merritt. Thank you, Courtney.
Thank you. All right, we'll see you guys next week.
James.
Yes, we'll plan for next week.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.